Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, in a moment, I'll speak to a 78-year-old woman who's facing homelessness at the end of this month. If you have an Irish passport but live overseas, should you have a right to vote? We'll debate. A new two-part RTE documentary uncovers fresh information on the disappearance of Annie McCarrick. Reporter Mick Pilo will be here later. The young, healthy man who was offered ab sculpting, facial figure, filler, dental crowns and a hair transplant in a Turkish clinic via text message. We'll talk to him too, and we'll have financial advice with Owen McGee. So if you're thinking about switching your mortgage, or if you're wondering what the most sensible thing is to do with your savings, text us now on 51551, or you can email us today, cb@rte.ie. First this morning though, I'm 78 and by the end of this month I will be homeless. That was the stark headline. You might have seen it over the weekend over an Irish Times column in which Micheline Walsh outlined how she will be left with nowhere to go when her rental tenancy ends at the end of this month. And Micheline is here with me now in the studio, along with her son-in-law, David Farrell, who's also Professor of Politics in UCD. Thank you both for coming in today. It's lovely to have you with us. Now, Micheline, this is your story.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how this all came about. How did you get to this point?
Let me start with, I've always rented, excuse me, and when I came back to Ireland in 2011, and I had a choice of two different places to rent, and they were reasonable rent. And the first place, I took one. I was there for 4 years. Then something happened with the landlords there. I think they went bankrupt or something. So I looked for somewhere else. I found the place I'm in now, and it was perfect. I found it the same day. I saw it on Daft, went to see it, and said, yes, I'd like it, and moved in.
So you've been there for years?
Yeah, 6-7 years now. Mm-hmm. I was working part-time, so and the rent was within my reach. As you probably know, my husband had a stroke, so he doesn't work. So it was our pensions and my part-time job. Then when COVID hit, my part-time job went, because it was admin for a language school, so that closed down. Oh well, they couldn't have any students in, so obviously my job went.
But the reason you're having to move is because the landlord is selling the property, isn't
that
right?
That's the reason,
So this is why you have no choice but to find somewhere else.
Yeah, but the thing is, if I had been still working, I might be able to afford the rents. But now, because I don't have that income, we just have our pensions, there is no way that we can pay anything near the rents that are being asked. Mm-hmm. So I suppose The landlord, very nice guy, really lovely guy. We get along very well. He did it in a nice way. He phoned me in advance. He said, look, I don't want this to land on your doorstep. I want to tell you person to person, this is what I'm planning to do. And at the time, I thought, oops. but he said, because I'd been there so long, I had almost 6 months. And I thought, right, okay, I better get moving. I better see what I can do. Because at this stage, I was on rent supplement. That doesn't travel with you. If you move, you don't take it with you. You have to. So I knew I had to register for the housing list. And I started on that. That was a major effort. But I did different things. Like, you know, I thought, right, we're old. There's old people places. So why not go and look there? Maybe, you know, they have arrangements for older people. But there, those places are, the people who run those places get their tenants from the council. So if it's Dublin City Council. For us, it's Clonskee, so it's Dunleary Rathdown. So that was my first big surprise. I did all the applications, and I also did an application for my husband's health to be, you know, a check for that, because he had a very bad stroke. He lost the sight of half of each eye. He lost the ability to read. So I can't even write a note for him. He's not very steady on his feet because one side of his body is a bit, it sort of seizes up on him. And he gets occasional seizures. And
so it's a very challenging situation that you're in.
It's a very challenging situation.
You also have pets.
Yeah.
And you've got two cats, I know, and a parrot, which you inherited or took in when...
A rescue parrot, yeah.
When the owner died. I mean, all of these things, and also everything that you accumulate over a lifetime, Micheline, these are things now that you're having to think about. What are you going to do?
I know. I mean, the flat is furnished, but only, you know, beds and a sofa. There are bits and pieces that I have that I... For instance, my grandparents, when they first were married, they lived in Paris, and their very first flat, they got a clock. And this is a beautiful clock. It's not a full grandfather. It's like a half a grandfather. And when my uncle died 5 years ago, my cousin allowed me to have that clock. The reason was that when I was little, I used to go to their house, and the clock was in the hall, and it had a pendulum that went back and forth. And I used to sit under the coat stand and listen to the pendulum and feel safe. So it's stupid, but you know.
No, it's not at all stupid. It's part of your life, and it's part of who you are and your memories.
Yeah.
But have you started getting rid of things now in preparation for what might happen?
I have. I did huge runs to the charity shop, cleared out old clothes, brought it all down to the minimum, got rid of all old papers. I got rid of books because, you know, you have to face... there's a novel, you've read it. Why do you keep it? You don't need to keep it. There's online. So get rid of all of that. Got rid of knickknacks, things. There's still more, but... And I've got to sell a couple of pieces of furniture that would be too big anyway.
And just going back to what you've done to try and find somewhere, you've gone down the usual route where people try to find somewhere to rent, be it through the websites and the estate agents and so on. You've spoken about reaching out to the council for help. But when it comes to homelessness services, until you are actually homeless, Micheline, they can't deal with you. Is that the case?
When you are, I learned about this as I went along. I was first on the list. Then there's the HAP list, and then there's the homeless HAP. And HAP is housing assistance payment. So we were accepted onto that when we were 6 weeks away from being homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually happened because our original date for leaving was the 28th of November. And it was towards the end of October that the eviction ban came into place. So that gave us leeway.
So now that the eviction ban has been lifted, you're now at this point.
Yeah.
When it came to the websites and the estate agents that I mentioned, how did you get on there trying to find somewhere yourself?
Initially, I did the usual thing. I went on daft.ie
all of those ones.
And what you have to do now is they say email. If you're interested, email. Before all of this, you could phone up and you could get an appointment to see the place. So I email. Now, I was told by the council when I was talking to them about when I apply for houses, you know, because you've got to find a place and then you have to agree with the landlord that they'll accept HAP. And because they are not allowed to say, no, we don't want HAP tenants. I think it's illegal or something like that. So when you say you have HAP, sometimes another person in the estate agency, oops, sorry, they've already let it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, what can you do?
So you've had no luck in that regard.
No luck.
The other option is to move in with family. But that has implications for you if you do that when it comes to those housing lists that you're on. You're off them then, are you?
Exactly, yeah. We are, I suppose, if we're living with somebody, we're not homeless. Mm-hmm. But it, apart from anything else, the only people, and actually nobody has room. Nobody in my family has extra room, not even on a couch. But bear in mind, I have a husband who has brain damage and who needs a lot of care and attention and patience. And it really, you know, it's not fair to do that to somebody else's home arrangement, to their relationship. Because, whereas, you know, he and I, we rub along well together. But you can't expect somebody else to put up with that. It's not fair.
What is going to happen? Where are you now? We're how many weeks? 3 weeks away?
Yeah. 3 weeks. Originally, it was going to be the 17th of April, and I spoke to the landlord and I said, can we go to the end of April? Because that's the end of the month and I'm trying to get somewhere. And he said, fine. And then at the beginning, at the end of April, I said, look, can we please go till the end of May, and he said, well, I thought you were going to get something. And I said, well, I am trying. I'm really trying. He wasn't unpleasant. He's nice. He's a nice man. He's a human being.
So you've managed to push it out, but you're probably, as far as you can go now.
Overholding, yeah.
The end of May is when you need to go. But you don't know where you're going to go.
There is nowhere. I spoke to the homeless section and I said, you know, what will happen? What will happen on that day when I phone you and say, we need accommodation? Because I will have my husband, myself, some clothes in the car. And they said to me, well, what we do is we've put a request into the central allocations, somewhere in the centre of Dublin, who place people in homeless accommodation, the likelihood is that you and your husband will be in, you'll get your own room in a hostel. Now, I don't know what that's like. Where's the bathroom? How am I going to manage? And I just can't see how I can, and how long is that for? Is that one night? Do I have to phone again the next day and say, okay, we need another night? It's unthinkable.
Mm-hmm. But that is the only option.
That is the only option, yeah.
David, you're listening to all of that. And our listeners will know you from political coverage over the years, analysing and commentating on political controversies, just like the lifting of the eviction ban. But you sit here this morning as a member of the family directly impacted now by this.
Yeah, absolutely. It gives me a whole new perspective on some of the failings of our political system, that Michelin should be put into this sort of situation. And we know there's, 12,000 homeless people right now. So she is by no means alone in this regard.
Mm. What sort of response have you had since the article was published?
We've had a lot of response, particularly on social media, and the vast bulk of it very positive and very supportive. We've had a couple of politicians who've reached out to us privately, who have said that they would be very happy to try and help take things along. So in a sense, because we've raised the profile of Michelin's case, now there are some politicians who are mm-hmm. prepared to step in. And
but it is really a catch-22, because we were just talking there about the prospect of moving in with family. So moving in with your family or somebody else's family, that has very severe implications for Michelin and her husband.
It does. I mean, it immediately removes them as a problem. they're no longer a homeless problem because they are not homeless, as Micheline said. Mm-hmm. But, you know, yes, theoretically we could move in, we could move our belongings around to try and make it possible for them. But this would be not easy, at least certainly in the short term it would be possible, mm-hmm. but not in the medium to long term. So it's not a viable option.
Really. So the wider family then, do you feel powerless to help?
We do, and this very strong sense of shame. This is the extraordinary thing about it. We all have this sort of sense that we're at fault in some way. And, you know, we have to keep reminding ourselves, this isn't our fault. We haven't caused this problem.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that way too, Micheline?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. I feel embarrassed, shameful, or like I didn't do something I should have done. Why am I here? Why am I at this stage in my life and not able to pay my rent? I actually had this naive idea that when you got old, the state would help you because you can't live on pensions. That, I mean, unless you get a huge pension, but normal pensions, state pensions, you can't pay rent on that. So I sort of thought, yeah, well, that's the job of the state, isn't it? To look after the vulnerable. And obviously not.
And how did you arrive at the decision to speak out publicly about it all?
Because I know that there will be other people. I'm of a generation. And to people like me, homeless was somebody on the side of the street. Eviction, it brings up the famine. And all the images you have are of dirt, inability to clean yourself, nowhere to sleep. That's the emotional image you get. And yes, it is. Mm-hmm. I feel I haven't told any of my neighbours. They probably know now, but I haven't told them because I feel embarrassed about it.
And have you been able to insulate your husband from this? Does he know?
He does know, but he manages to live in a kind of a bubble of his own.
Yeah.
Where he can do something maybe to make it better. He's not operating in the real world. So when it starts, when we start talking about it, then he gets very anxious and very disturbed. And that's when, you know, the possibility of seizures and things like that.
Yeah, so you're trying to protect him from the reality of this.
Yeah.
And David, with your political analysis hat on here, what is this experience telling you about the political response to the housing crisis?
For me, the contrast is with COVID-19. You know, this was a sense of urgency, of an emergency, of a real crisis. And there was this sort of joined up thinking that we saw it operate day by day. We're not seeing that with this. So what we're seeing is something that's referred to now as a crisis, but the government isn't acting in that way. There isn't it's all the responsibilities on the Minister for Housing. Well, what about the other ministries that have some relevance, like social welfare or health or, local education in the case of young families, for example?
Mm-hmm.
There are 31 local authorities. Well, how do we know that each local authority is operating with the same degree of urgency and who's trying to coordinate all of that sort of thing? And then, as we've seen with Micheline's case, there's different bits of the local authority that you have to deal with. Are they talking to each other? So this is lack of a sense of joined up thinking. This is lack of a sense of a client-centred approach. If Micheline fetches up in front of the council and says, we're about to be made homeless, there should be some authority that's taken charge of her case and taking it all the way from the pillar to the post that unfortunately she has to go through.
This is the extraordinary thing for you, that until that day,
yes,
when you're out,
yes,
there just doesn't seem to be help there for you.
No. No, there is a service that they provide. It's called Place Finders. Very, very nice lady. Lovely lady. And I know she does her best. But she tries to find places that she thinks might accept HAP. And but they're not there.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And that's what we know. And your experience in general with the local authorities, did you find you're running around in circles since November?
Yeah.
When you were dealing with them.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say they are very pleasant. Nobody has been unpleasant. They've all been very pleasant. And some of them more than others. But it's, you phone up and you have to speak. Well, which department? Your allocations is the housing list. Then there's the older people bit of it as well. We're on that as well. It's a shorter list, but I don't expect to get anything in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, how many years left will I, realistically speaking? You know, if I get 10 years, I would be delighted to be an 88-year-old lady. But, you know, both my parents died in their late 70s. So how many years? I haven't got time to wait on the list. What do I do in the meantime? I just feel like I don't exist, you know? It's a strange feeling. This image I have of myself, I try to imagine the morning of leaving and putting my husband in the car, and then phoning the people. But I can't see where I'm going from there. You know, if you're going to the doctor's, you have your... an image in your head of yourself going and parking in that spot, walking into the doctor's office. But I have no image after getting in the car. I have no image. I don't know where. I don't know what hostels are like. I don't know. It's just like that I'll disappear or something, you know?
You know, there are so many people, I would imagine, listening to this. You mentioned the figure of 12,000 who are in the same situation. Not everybody is brave enough to talk about it. And I know that's a huge step for you to take. And when we spoke earlier, you were saying you were nervous about this for all of those reasons, you know, about what people might think about you and now the neighbours know and so on.
Yeah.
But people have to speak out about it, don't they, David? Yeah. Otherwise, nothing happens.
Exactly. So, you know, by raising the profile of Micheline's case, we hope it'll help many, many other families around the country because they need help.
We wish you well and keep in touch with us and hopefully something will change in the next 3 weeks for you and your husband. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And David,
much,
thank you to you as well. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.